And welcome back to Cinema Cemetery. I'm Kate.
And I'm Dan.
And this is episode 51, 1978's The Deer Hunter, an epic war drama. Dan, were you ready for Deer Hunter?
I thought this was going to be like the Looney Tunes with Elmer Fudd in his early days before he decided to turn his sights to rabbits. Or perhaps it was about somebody that had gone off and we were writing letters to my dear, the deer hunter out in the woods. But what a turn this movie took, Kate.
Deer, comma, hunter. See, I thought it was just going to be like Bobby De Niro and Christopher Walken hunting deer. And maybe the deer attacked them, or like a bear attacked the deer hunter. I thought this was going to be a story about man and the elements and beast. I too was disappointed with my expectations.
Or perhaps like in The Queen from, 2008, when Helen Mirren as Queen Elizabeth II sees the stag in the distance and says, "What beauty," and the movie ends, right? That was going to be this movie.
Sure.
Absolutely. Or maybe this was a like Maleficent, the villain's take on the Bambi story.
It could also be that.
Right.
There's so many different things that the deer hunter could possibly be. And yet, none of them was what we encountered.
If you have not seen The Deer Hunter, you have no idea what it's going to be about. Unless you want to stick around and find out here.
Exactly. Now, I like how we start these, and every time I'm somehow surprised when you go, "Kate, why don't you tell us what the movie's about?" And then I do the absolute worst job because I'm put on the spot and very nervous. So, Dan, can you tell us very badly what The Deer Hunter is actually about?
Absolutely. So The Deer Hunter is set in the late 60s in the small PA town of Clareton. Yeah. Actually, this movie, we found out, was filmed locally, filmed a little bit in Pittsburgh, a little bit in Mingo Junction, a little bit in Cleveland, but set in the Rust Belt in the 60s, in the midst of the steel era. And I've talked about that for too long, but it's actually a very important point. It's about three Russian-American, not immigrants, descendants, I think, second generation, even though they do not seem Russian at all. Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, and their friend. Anyway, the first... I don't know who that actor is. Anyway, the first third of the movie is one of the most poorly planned, as far as drinking is concerned, weddings. The then second third is this crew. The next day or 2 days later, they are shipped out to Vietnam, and it follows their struggle in the battlefield and, of course, the aftermath. So that's you know, the synopsis. That's what I would put on the back of the DVD or something. But that's enough to get someone started if they haven't seen it. Now, there will be spoilers from now on, but if you're just looking for the concept, that's what we're getting into.
So your impression of me was okay. I would give it a 50-50. I think you definitely took some turns I would have taken. Definitely fixated on a few things. In your description, you also missed the most important part, the part where after the wedding, while they're all hungover, they go and hunt deer.
Ah, yes. Well, I thought I'd make that a surprise.
Surprise. And the whole thing is buried around this idea that, like, you should only take one shot to shoot a deer. Just one shot, which becomes an important line of dialogue exchange between characters throughout the film, and ultimately results in the untimely end of someone. So that's, I think I cut you up there. Is that, yeah?
Well, untimely is an interesting word, and we'll circle back to that. But Kate, right. I think this movie is best looked at in three parts. You talk about a movie with three-act structure. This movie is 3 hours yes. and 4 minutes, and it fits rather nicely into the three-act structure. So I actually, when I talk about this movie, this is one of those movies I can...
How often do you talk about this movie?
Well, probably, so let me count, like now.
Now?
When we watched it, and the first time I watched it, so three times. But when I do...
Whenever that happens.
When I do, I like to to say I don't dislike this movie. I don't ever need to see it again. I think twice is plenty. However, you know, it's parts of it are very well done. Parts of it are well done, but I don't want to see them anymore. And parts of them, I think, could be cleaned up a little bit. One part that I really like, and I think I was probably bored the first time I saw it, but seeing it now, I think the first hour is actually almost a really good movie by itself. I think that if they had like stretched out a little bit more, they could have made a solid 90-minute movie with just that first hour.
Yeah. I think each hour chunk of the movie could have been its own thing. Its own thing. So why don't I agree? When we talk about this movie, which seems to be right now and last Friday after we watched it, let's do that. So disclaimer for anyone who's new, any new listeners, Dan and I are from Pittsburgh. And familiar with the tri-state area, so where it was also filmed in Mingo Junction, we're familiar with that general area. And so the first hour, I look at it as a tribute to Eastern European, Southwest Pennsylvanian culture. It's set in the 60s, but really, like, some of that stuff, like the way the characters were, the way the community was with each other, very much still rang true to how I grew up and
small town culture, right? You see this even more. Just everybody knows each other. Everybody's walking in and out of each other's life. There's just that tight knit community. You didn't grow up in a small town, but you grew up in a very tight knit.
Like they were Russian Orthodox, so their church community was really clutch, and that rang true for me. But even when you're looking at the it's set with the steel mill being the center of town, and I don't know, everywhere you drive around Pittsburgh you can find a steel mill and something that looks like that. Although I was dying because they never said it was set in Clareton until later, and I was like, and we were looking at Mingo Junction, we're like, oh yeah, it does look like Pittsburgh, and they're like, oh, I'm in Clareton. I was like, why didn't they just film in Clareton? It looks the same.
But, I don't know.
What was going on? Nothing. Clareton had a steel mill.
But what an interesting day. I mean, we have this group working in the steel mill, and I guess they worked the night shift. They get off their shift in the daytime, and we assume it's, what, 8 a.m., 7 a.m.?
They go to the bar.
Immediately go to the bar, which is open right for them at 7 a.m. Not something you see so much anymore.
Nancy B's in the south side. She's open for the nurses to do post-shift shots.
But this crew doesn't plan very well. They get off their shift. They decide to drink Rolling Rock exclusively in the morning.
Local beer.
In the morning. Gotta support the team. They had to have at least had 10 each. And then there's a wedding later that day. So we don't
and
see
like
any.
And like one of the guys getting drunk is the groom.
Yeah. We don't see any naps. I don't know if they went home and had one. I don't know.
The whole time Dan's texting me going, day drinking is a horrible idea.
These guys do not look like they're 22. They look like they're 32. And at that point, they're not, even if they take a nap, they're not going to be feeling great around the wedding time. They're going to be sluggish. They're going to need to brush their teeth. And I don't know. I probably, the way these gentlemen seem to live, they have a stronger consistency than the two of us. So perhaps they're used to it and able to push through.
Yeah, they also are super reckless. They like to play games in cars, both sober and drunk. They like to drive dangerously, take chances. The way they drive, it was stressful to me. The games they were playing, stressful. They were like super hammered getting into the car and then chasing someone like on foot. Just recklessness.
Yeah, just mean pranks. They would get out of the car to use the bathroom in the woods and then leave the guy there and then drive away and then come back and then leave him again. We talked as we watched. We wondered if this was a sign of the times. Were people more just generally reckless back then? Or was this just because of this community? We see scenes of people streaking during the wedding, people punching their spouses and their dates mid-reception, people getting hammered and driving.
Fine with it.
Everybody's fine with it. Everybody, oh, no, you're fine. Walking down the alley at the bowling alley to get your ball because you think it's taken too long for it to come back.
You know, as you do.
So I liked it a lot. I think...
I mean, it was nostalgic. It was, I could very much see my friends and family, maybe not streaking, although maybe, but like it gave that warm and fuzzy of a hometown that I knew. And I thought it did a good job of showing that.
Yes, it had a solid tone. You had clear, without having an actual plot in the first hour, had clear tone. You had clear character studies. You could tell that there wasn't quite a love triangle, but there was definitely a relationship between Christopher Walken and Meryl Streep. But Robert De Niro's there, but it's clear nobody's acting inappropriately.
It doesn't just tell you. It lets you, like, the movie lets you figure out what's going on without being very overt. And that was very nice.
And I think this is one of the first times we have had the opportunity in an epic movie like this to just exist with characters without being a plot driven at us. And that's why the movie's 3 hours, right? They had tried to make this 2.5 hours, we've got to go to a much tighter knit story in the first bit, and I think that would have harmed this just a bit.
I agree. And you know, it takes us from this big exciting community filled event to just the guys, right? This tight knit group of guys going up to hunt deer, and clearly the two main characters, Robert De Niro's character and Christopher Walken. So
well, it's funny you say tight knit, because like half of that sequence is just them making Fredo feel uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
He forgot his boots. He's still wearing his suit from the day before. There's an extra pair of boots in the car. He wants to borrow them. Robert De Niro says no. And then there's just this, like, it felt like 10-minute sequence of him refusing to give him boots.
I know. And like potentially pointing a firearm at him. That was another reckless thing. And Fredo continues to just be Fredo.
Our actor for Fredo is, of course, John Cazale.
I'm trying to look at how we.
And I find out later, Kate, this was his last role ever. He was dying of lung cancer while filming this, and he died before the movie came out. I bet Robert De Niro feels bad for being so mean to him and just not letting him have the boots.
He played the same character. Yeah. Just instead of being Italian, he was Russian Orthodox from, you know, Southwest PA. Poor Fredo. But anyway, that's beside the point. So
the deer hunter. You should check out the first hour, and I think you'll have a nice short evening, and then you can go about your life.
And everything's fine.
Everything will be fine.
And they do get a deer, one shot. And that's always like, that's the thing that Mike and Nick always say back and forth to each other, right? Because they're the brothers, they're friends, but they're, you know, soul brothers.
And two shots is P.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't do it. So you have this like big, awesome community sequence, and you just get to live with the characters and you start to love them.
Okay. You're saying big, awesome. I think just nice, right? They're in a gym, right? The wedding's in a gym.
They're not. They're in like a Schuylkill club.
There's like basketball hoops on the ceiling.
It's like an Elks Lodge type situation. Right. And that's nice.
It's
for
nice.
That time.
Yes.
That's a nice wedding.
It's a nice.
My mom was married in a fire hall. She had a good time.
Nice little, I don't think big awesome is the word here.
Well, I didn't find a big, awesome community sequence. Okay. Like, not like the wedding itself. I'm not judging the wedding.
I'm not
saying
anti-judging
how the characters were together. Like, we got a picture. So anyway.
And then war crimes.
And then all of a sudden,
for an hour.
We're in Nam.
Yes, we cut to Vietnam. It opens,
you cut to Nam, and you see one guy find a Vietnamese family and like hiding in this little hole, and he just blows them up. And then Robert De Niro is tossing flamethrowers on a village, and it was jarring to the senses.
Within the span of 3 minutes, we see a grenade destroy a family. We see a family running around, still alive afterwards. Robert De Niro uses a flamethrower. And then Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, and their friend get kidnapped and forced to play Russian roulette against each other by North Vietnamese captors.
With handguns. It's with awful.
Handguns. And we... I had forgotten how rough it was so quickly. This is
hard to watch.
Hard to watch. And I did some research later. I guess this was probably not the first, but this is one of the first big Vietnam War movies. The war had been over for several years at this point, and now, you know, media is starting to turn around and look at what happened. And I can't believe they went so hard into it at this point. There's no heroism in any of this aside from their survival instinct and their bravery here. It's just rough stuff.
It was dark. Again, it turns us back to anti-warness. This is not even to be political. I think just our sensibilities are like, who decides this is okay? The answer is not us.
It turns out I read a little bit of background, and this was not a deep cut, but this was totally made up. This wasn't a thing. Like, Vietnam captors did not force the POWs to play Russian roulette against each other.
That you know of.
In fact, this entire movie script was originally about a group of dudes that go to Las Vegas and gamble playing Russian roulette for money. And then they decided, you know, it would make it better if we set it in the Vietnam War. And the script got doctored and changed and merged with some other script, and we ended up with The Deer Hunter. But the idea of Russian roulette for money, that's fiction. That was somebody else's screenplay idea that got chopped up and moved around. So I think that...
I'm not loving that edit.
Well, I think that made it a little bit more interesting to me. If this had just been like generic Vietnam War scenes, I don't know, I would have gotten real bored. I'm not into that kind of war movie stuff, so I'm glad they kind of focused on singular issues,
elements.
Yeah,
well, anyway, as they're playing, the Vietnamese soldiers learn a very important rule: don't give your captors loaded guns, even if it's to play a game, because Christopher Walken starts a shoot 'em up. They end up taking all of the North Vietnamese out, and then the three of them, well, De Niro and Walken get out, and then they get their other friend and they drag him out, and there's this whole rescue situation, and a helicopter appears, but they can only get Christopher Walken out, so he's by himself, and the other two like get picked up elsewhere, but Christopher Walken's walking around Vietnam with amnesia.
And then in the most ridiculous notion of the entire movie, he is met by a rich Frenchman that likes to recruit brave amnesiac dudes to be Russian roulette players for lots of money. So Christopher Walken is now lost in Vietnam, where Robert De Niro and his injured friend, whose name we continue to forget, returns home.
Steve.
Is it? John Savage, right? He's the actor.
Yeah, it's John Savage, but his name is Steve. It's Mike, Nick, and Steve. It's like Mike is De Niro, Nick is Walken, and Steve is John Savage.
Yes. And then the final third, and it's probably the longest part of the movie. This Vietnam War part is thankfully a little bit shorter. The final half third of the movie is the aftermath. Robert De Niro and Steve back at home, and just dealing with how do you come back? How do you deal with life? And
which I thought was really well done, right? Because Steve, because of his injuries, he has his legs have been amputated, and Robert De Niro comes back physically fine, but mentally he now is in this caged version of himself. And it was really interesting because Nick's girlfriend, played by Meryl Streep, is just looking for some companionship. And so she's trying desperately in the worst backwards way to reach out and connect with Robert De Niro. And he, in his like PTSD self, what did he say? I'm feeling distant and can't connect with anyone right now. He used all of his emotion words.
There are many times in this movie the characters say exactly what they are thinking and feeling. She says, can't we just sleep together and make ourselves feel better temporarily? And he says, no, I am feeling distant and perhaps cannot engage with human contact. Oh, okay. Well, tell us how you really feel.
And I'm like, dear God, what's happening?
Yes, there's little poetry in this movie. It is.
Yeah, it's not. No.
But yes, then, I'm glad there was no like grandiose speech, like you don't know what it's like over there, right? It was real day to day dealing with situations, some awkwardly, some appropriately, some inappropriately, just sort of off and on. No giant arcs here.
Yeah, and Mike, he is this very noble, honorable man. And so he really does take it on himself when he finds out that Steve made it back, because he didn't know. But Steve isn't back home and he doesn't know why. He goes to Steve's wife and realizes where Steve is and decides, I'm going to bring Steve home, right? So he goes and gets Steve and he brings him home.
Steve's playing bingo.
In a rehab hospital.
Yeah.
But then, like, and they find out that, like, somebody's been sending Steve money from Saigon every week, and Mike puts it together that Nick is still alive in Saigon. So, why is Nick sending... Did I miss something? Why is Nick sending Steve money in a hospital? Like, how does he know?
Well, yeah, we don't know. We must know that he has some sort of memory, and he is putting the money somewhere, and so... a lot of money. We see lots and lots of $100 bills, which back then would have been, you know, $600 bills. So,
just sitting in a drawer in a rehab hospital. Like, come on, Steve, put that stuff under a mattress.
Yeah, and let Nick hang out as long as he wants, right? Make some more money before you go get him.
You gotta bring the guy home. He's flailing.
Right.
But then the other poignant part, right, before Nick goes on his next journey, the boys all, or Mike, the boys all go back to hunt deer again. The deer hunter returns, but this time, Mike makes an important decision. He doesn't shoot the deer. Enough killing. Yeah. Enough killing. He's done. And also enough shenanigans, enough reckless behavior. He's seen enough. And his friends who didn't get drafted are still acting like idiots, and he just cannot with them. I get it.
And then we have our final climax, which was far less dramatic than I remember. It's a lot of...
pretty dramatic.
No, the final scene is still excellent and very dramatic, but a lot of leading up to it is just him like, hey, where do I go? He doesn't charge in with the army. He's just like walking around the street trying to find Nick.
Yeah, Mike decides he's going back to Vietnam and he's going to find Nick. And so like a giant chunk of it is him just walking around Vietnam looking for his friend, because they're brothers, you know? And then we get to the last scene and he finds him, and like clearly Nick is stoned out of his gourd. Like in the beginning, and it was in the beginning of the movie, I texted Dan because it was so hilarious, because all these guys are leaving the steel mill at the end of their shift and they're all like tough, right? They're tough yinzers. They just left the steel mill. And then there's like tall Christopher Walken, who looks like he's like strutting off a Broadway stage with a bright old like smile, and he's having fun. And then you see this, and he is just a gaunt, terrified, sunken figure that is a shadow of his former self.
He has a fever, and cowbell is not going to help it at this point.
Oh,
he is an addict, and he is still continuing to play Russian
doing
roulette
lots of heroin
for money.
Russian roulette.
Yes, yeah. And so the climax: Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken have to play against each other in Russian roulette. One shot. And
one
we
shot.
Will let you. One we shot. Will let you watch the movie if you haven't seen it. We'll let you watch it yourself to see just how it ends. But without revealing any names, Kate, I want to go to the last moment of the movie where we have a number of our leads.
The movie drag on.
Oh, very long here, yes. In fact, I read that they called it, some people refer to this movie as The Deer Hunter and Hunter and Hunter, because it is a little too long.
I mean, it does have like a Lord of the Rings ending to it where you're like, we could be done now.
But at the very end of the movie, one character has died and they are at this character's funeral. And at the very end, after the reception and after the funeral, they all spontaneously decide to sing God Bless America. And as I watched... I read this was a controversy at the time because I was thinking it too as I watched. Is this meant patriotically, or was it meant sarcastically, ironically? And I like the movie. Does it? You could take it in either direction. Was this meant to be even in spite of all we've been through, we still love our country, or was it, I can't believe that we were sold this bill of goods?
Can I say a little self reflection on that song? I ask myself that question every time I hear it sung. Like, it resonates. Is this propaganda? Is this serious? Is God blessing our country? Do we see what's occurring? So I always have that question. And so, yes, I think that I don't know. And the movie definitely leaves it up to interpretation.
Yeah. And that is it. That is the Deer Hunter. So.
Oof. Just watch that last little bit. I mean, you can skip the funeral part if you want, but the one shot. Ooh, I gotta tell you, I want to tell you something, Dan. I had to do a lot of laundry because the movie was very violent. And it was very upsetting, and I just spent 5 days watching The Nanny. I was on vacation, and then I watched this, so it was jarring. And so I was doing a lot of chores and I was trying not to get invested. And then we got to that scene. And all the way up to that, I was like, this movie's fine, but it's kind of long and it's kind of boring. But the way they brought the characters together solidified this as, I want to say, I'm putting this towards the top. For me, this really? Movie was okay. Well done. You look surprised. Here we are.
It's tough to say. It's tough to say because you can appreciate it, but you also never want to watch it again. It definitely goes for it, but then the dialogue is so clunky. It's definitely longer than it needs to be, but it also deals with some important issues. So, yeah, it's a challenge to figure out where to place this. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, let's place it.
That's what I'm saying. I thought it was a good segue.
So if we go to the list, you know, this movie, we want to ask, first of all, I guess we would compare it to All Quiet on the Western Front, another definitely direct war movie that deals with the horrors of war. Do we place this above or below?
Where is All Quiet? All Quiet on the Western Front. Okay, I found it. It's below Casablanca. Okay. I think this movie is on par or better than Bridge on the River Kwai.
I don't know if it's better than The Sting and All the King's Men or The Lost Weekend. Maybe Bridge on the River Kwai needs to come down a little bit. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think it should go where Bridge on the River Kwai is. And we should put Bridge on the River Kwai below The Lost Weekend. Like, I
swap them out because I definitely,
that's what I'm doing. Yes. Okay.
That's what I'm doing. It's our list. We can do whatever we want.
Well, things, you know, as time passes, you feel differently.
Things
a
change.
Little bit.
People remain the same. Fate separates them.
Forming no unity. Yes. So The Deer Hunter just above The Sting and All the King's Men in Lost Weekend and Bridge in the River Kwai just below The Lost Weekend and above all. Yeah, I can deal with this. This works. This is tough though, because I don't, it definitely is a more flawed movie than some of the, like The Sting is far more well crafted than The Deer Hunter. The Deer Hunter is much more emotionally impactful. I think the I don't know. I need to think about this.
I think The Deer Hunter, the thing that sold me was, it was a long watch for a big payoff, but it was, I've never seen a movie, and I'm sure I have, but this just, it was like an epic novel, but I watched it on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. The first hour, I think, gives it much more weight than the middle and apart, so that brings it up.
And much like when you're just going through an epic novel and you're like, can we just move this along for literally maybe five pages of something? That's what this did for me. So that means it was a good story.
Well, once again, Kate, we knew this would be rough, and it was, but it actually scored much better than we thought. I wasn't sure where this would fall. Actually, I was completely unclear how this would hold up. So I think we are in agreement. Yes, it is a little higher than we thought.
Look at us go. What's next? I always like to be surprised.
Next up, our final film of the 70s as we continue our drudge through the generally dismal late 70s and 80s. We have a movie, once again starring Meryl Streep, about divorce. Kramer versus Kramer. Dustin Hoffman is back against Meryl Streep in Kramer versus Kramer. Yes.
We didn't really talk about Meryl Streep in this film. Her role is relatively small, but, you know, she delivered as Meryl does. She was a little overacty, but still good.
Yeah, this is not her first film, I don't think, but one of her first big films. So, yeah. And her first nomination, her first Oscar nomination.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, so Kramer versus Kramer is next. I'm not looking forward to that because I only saw it once. I think I was a little kid. What was my mom thinking? But I didn't, like, love it because I think I was just sad.
I'm not eager to see it, but I am also not eager to see Ordinary People, which is even worse, and that comes next after that. So the 80s is going to be very hit or miss, but we finish up the 70s, which has been generally a solid decade. Next up on Cinema Cemetery.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks as always to Andre Perez for the artwork. Oh my gosh, I lost my train of thought.
And Charles Hearn for our intro and outro music.
See you next time.
Bye.